from KQED. From KQED Public Radio, welcome to Forum. I'm Penny Nelson. Coming up in the hour ahead, we continue our California Election Watch series with a close look at Proposition 47. That's a ballot measure that would reduce the penalties for certain crimes. We'll hear from guests both pro and con, and you can weigh in as well with your thoughts or questions on the initiative. That's all ahead on Forum after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, good morning and welcome to Forum. I'm Penny Nelson. This morning, as part of our California Election Watch series, we tackle Proposition 47, a measure that reduces penalties for certain offenders convicted of non-serious and non-violent property and drug crimes. It also allows certain offenders who've previously been convicted of such crimes to apply for reduced sentences. Finally, it mandates that any state money saved from this measure be spent to support school truancy prevention, mental health and substance abuse treatment, and victim services. That's what California voters will either approve or reject on November 4th. And with us to debate the pros, cons, and details of the measure are two guests this morning. We've got George Gascon with us. He supports Proposition 47 and is the district attorney for the city and county of San Francisco, as well as being a former chief of police for San Francisco. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Penny.
Also with us is Steve Wagstaff. He is district attorney for San Mateo County. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Penny.
Well, first of all, let's start. I offered the listeners the language, the words about sort of what's in the proposal in the introduction, but let's clarify these important particulars that are mentioned. We talk about some crimes and some offenders. So first of all, let's start with the crimes. George Gascon, I would like to ask you which crimes would be eligible for the reduced sentencing.
Sure, Penny. First of all, what we're looking at is simple possession of drugs or drugs for personal use. We know that this is an area where the system hasn't worked very well. You know, incarcerating people that have a substance abuse problem or people that have mental health problems, generally incarceration doesn't work unless they're dangerous otherwise. We're also looking at other crimes that generally tend to be related to this problem. So we're looking at simple theft offenses. And this is really almost an adjustment to inflation. Over 20 years ago, we set up a threshold of $450 where any property that was stolen, simple theft, under $450 was a misdemeanor, over $450 was a felony. That threshold has not moved for over two decades, and we're bringing it up to $950. We certainly don't believe that back when the thresholds were created that people were anticipating that people would be prosecuted for a felony for what would have been, say, $449 20 years ago. But in essence, if you look at inflation, that's what we're doing today. And then we look at the people that are generally involved in this. We're talking about shoplifting. We're talking about low-level theft. Are generally people that are either poor or people that have substance abuse and mental health problems, and that's what they're doing.
So at this point, to clarify, at this point, somebody who is picked up for shoplifting and say for, you know, for materials that add up to a couple $100, that person at this point goes through the court system and can be sentenced to jail time.
Yes, but that's a misdemeanor, right? But if you are stealing $451 today, that would be a felony. Also, if you had a prior theft conviction and you go back and you go into the store and shoplift, you could, even if it's under the $450, in fact, it could be a loaf of bread, you could be prosecuted as a felony and could do, you know, significant time in custody. As a misdemeanor, this is limited to 1 year in county jail as a maximum sentence.
How does this affect or play into the three strikes law?
It does not at all, because this really doesn't, you know, it has nothing to do with three strikes. You know, three strikes, we're talking about people that committed serious offenses. You know, the last offense may or may not be serious. But this is really completely decoupled, unrelated to three strikes.
Is that because the people that have two convictions that are already on their record that are serious felons are that's taking those people out of the equation? It's not so much the crime, it's that those people are out of the equation?
Well,
Steve Wagstaff, you're shaking your head
now. No, it doesn't, because it's really it's offense based, because George is accurate in what he says. It isn't what their record is. It's what the new offense is. So somebody could have what you just described as some prior strike offenses. But if the new offense is the crimes that George just mentioned, that's what takes them, brings them within the category of this proposition. It isn't the fact that they have those priors.
Okay, so there's not really vagary around what the crime is. It's really, there's a dollar amount associated with the crime. And if the person is above that dollar amount, that is considered more than a misdemeanor. That is a felony and that can meet with jail time.
That's well, and that's a misdemeanor. You have jail time too. You know, I think it's very important to underline. We're not. It's not a get out of jail pass. Prop 47 is just simply saying there are certain low level offenses that they should be treated differently than the more serious stuff. As a misdemeanor, if you get convicted, you can still do custody time up to a year.
For both of your respective counties, what proportion of crimes or arrests are of that ilk?
Well, so for us, it's a majority, and that's a really good thing. And we want to make sure that we have more time to deal with the more serious and violent stuff. And what Prop 47 will do is give us the opportunity to take some of this low-level stuff that today, especially in the drug category, they only get to be prosecuted as a felony. It takes a lot of police time. It takes a lot of court time and prosecutors' time. And we believe that actually we're better off with having our cops out on the street and better off with our prosecutors dealing with other types of crimes. That spending the time that generally takes to prosecute a felony requires more time. You have preliminary hearings. There are more complex investigations and trials. Some of the stuff really doesn't belong in that arena.
And Steve Wagstaff, in San Mateo County, would you say it's by far a majority of crimes that are of this sort?
We are estimating that by our count that if the proposition passes, it will take approximately one-third of the cases that we now prosecute as felonies and have them go proceed as misdemeanors. So substantial.
A substantial, but not the majority.
Not of our felonies. It doesn't. But as George says, if you count all our cases, certainly, then it would be the majority would fit into that because many of those are done as misdemeanor now.
Okay. And another word that's used in this proposal that needs a little bit clearer definition is when they are referring to offenders, some criminals. So break down for us which criminals are the ones that are potentially going to benefit from this situation.
Well, I think that primarily, again, as I indicated earlier, this really is geared toward people that have substance abuse problems. People that are buying, they're in possession of drugs for personal use. A lot of those people also have mental health problems. And what we're hoping to do is take the savings from the proposition and provide opportunities for cities and counties to use that money to provide services. We know there are many counties that do not have services. For instance, Paul Gallegos, one of our fellow district attorneys in Humboldt County and one of the supporters of this. And when we had the initial conversations, you know, what Paul told me, he said, George, you know, when I have these people that come through our courts and they have a substance abuse problem, I really don't have a place to send them. And I'm hoping that I can get some funding to be able to have a different reality. So this is what this is all about.
And Steve Wagstaff?
Well, George is right. It will help for counties like small counties up north. My concern is that we are actually, I think, going to hurt. My view, I hope I'm wrong, but I'm very fearful that we're going to actually hurt the effort to try and deal with drug addiction. My concern with the initiative is that what it does, it is offense-based. Not offender-based. And so to that extent, you can have as, you know, in terms of what you charge, as George noted, if it's over $950 in the past, it can be a felony, but it can also be a misdemeanor. And for instance, for us in my county, anything that's under $4,000, we have not for years been charging that as felony. We have on our own raised it. As George noted, the legislature hasn't, so we did. So as the DA in my county, we exercise the discretion that I have to do that. My concern is that there are individuals who are not excluded from it. And such as we've had other propositions, including one recently that George was a very strong supporter of, Prop 36, that took and had excluded from it a group of people who didn't deserve to get the benefit of it. And that's my concern here, is that because it is offense-based rather than offender-based, that the people who are excluded, and there are some exceptions, there's a very narrow group of about a category of around six people who don't get the benefit of this law, even if it's a new offense.
Who?
That would be people who have prior convictions for homicide, prior conviction for sexual assault or child molest, people who are 290 sex registrants, people
what
who—
What is that? The
anybody
sex offender?
Who, sex offender who have prior convictions for that. Anybody who has been convicted of a life sentence. Anybody who has assaulted a police officer with a machine gun. Those are exceptions to it. What I'm concerned about is that if that list had been longer, I don't know what my viewpoint would be on this initiative, because what I'm concerned about is that if people have been to prison for robbery, for kidnapping, simple kidnapping, for domestic violence, human trafficking, crimes like that, they get the benefit of this. And there is no exception. I understand it maybe the first time, but they get that benefit for these offenses, you know, for these the list of offenses that come under this, they get that benefit forever. And as the district attorney, every district attorney should have the discretion to treat that as they want, as the law allows us now. I think that I should have and I want to have the discretion to say, if somebody's been to prison five different times for robbery and domestic violence, if they come out and commit this crime, they should be felons and treated as felons.
Career criminals.
Yeah. As George notes, if you're dealing with those low-level just offenders, there's merit to the point. That's what I'm concerned about.
Okay. So let me ask you, where does judge discretion fall into this? So mandatory minimum sentences is something we all know exists, and I don't know where that falls with these this classification of offenses. But just as you were saying, Steve, you know, this idea of a career criminal or somebody who's just had made year after year of relatively low level but constant offenses and maybe escalating. Where is a judge's subjectivity or discretion permitted into the process?
Well, let me throw a couple of things here, because I agree with Steve that actually his county and under his leadership, there's been very thoughtful application of the law. But that isn't the case across the state, number one. Number two, I think it's important to recognize that, for instance, today, if you are in the possession of methamphetamine for personal use, as a prosecutor, I have the discretion to either prosecute you for a misdemeanor or for a felony. If you are in the possession of heroin or cocaine, I do not have that option. I only have a felony hammered. There is a lot of science behind what we're trying to do. We know that people that suffer from substance abuse and mental health generally do not do well when they're incarcerated. We also know that people that commit low-level offenses and they're incarcerated and they're mixed with people that have a history of violence and more serious offenses, they tend to do worse. The recidivism rate right now for people that go to the California correction system is 6 out of 10 within 3 years. That means that we are failing at 60% of the time. We are not using the science. We're not using the tools that we know that are likely to reduce recidivism and therefore reduce the victimization of many people.
Okay, so but in any community, the DAs and the judges know that community. So, you know, all kinds of different communities have all kinds of different weaknesses. Where does the discretion rest? Is it with the DA? So the DA can say, look, I can see this is a kid that has never had issues and I don't see a problem path going down the road. Or does the judges, I guess what I'm getting back to is where this fits into mandatory minimums.
Well,
but it doesn't because
the mandatory minimums are generally for much more serious offenses,
okay.
Right? So this offense is even under the current law, they generally are not going to be impacted by mandatory minimums. But the problem is, it's not just about the discretion of the individuals in a particular community. The problem is about doing the things that work and avoiding the things that do not work.
But that's been said many times, and then judges get frustrated because they feel like their hands are tied. Or this is what we've heard or read about, is that, you know, it will be a situation where everybody thinks it's sort of a miscarriage of justice, but our hands are tied, it's what the law says, and I guess I'm wondering where this fits into that equation that so many people have found troubling.
Well, let me give you an example, right? Under the current law, you can have somebody that has had prior theft offenses, and they walk into a store, and they shoplift a loaf of bread, right? They can be prosecuted for a felony, and they can be doing up to 3 years in custody at about a $62,000 of WAC, depending on your county. That's pretty much the average. I think the taxpayers and the voters have to ask a question. Is that worth that much money from my taxpayers, number one? And number two, should I be putting that level of resources at the expense of maybe not being able to deal with people that are committing more serious crimes because the whole system is clogged?
Right. Okay. And I understand that that's sort of a dramatic extreme case where somebody steals a loaf of bread and then they're incarcerated. But Steve Wagstaff, I imagine you logically would agree with what George Gascon is saying in that line, but you're saying, but that's just one story, and that's, again, we're dealing with the offense as opposed to offenders. Is that right?
That's right. And, you know, I know, again, in my county, and I know in Georgia's, there are no Jean Valjeans. We're not, you know, we will not have that happen at all. As a matter of fact, if somebody steals a loaf of bread, I don't want to even prosecute them if they're doing it because they're hungry. That's just simply not within the system. My concern is that what works for George and me may not be what they want out there, and California has made a choice. They've, you know, they've turned down six different states, and we've said we want 58 counties. And I think that may be part of where George and I disagree, is that what he's suggesting is would be one broad sweep for the entire state. And mine is that what works in my county or his may not be what's good for Imperial or County Fresno, Sacramento. And if a DA is doing something that's out of touch with what that community wants, well, every 4 years they can throw that DA out. It also takes away, you know, there was a safety net. If you had a DA who was just overcharging things, judges have the power to reduce cases from felonies to misdemeanor. George mentioned two types of drug possessions, heroin, cocaine. I thoroughly agree with him. I would, you know, I wish it has not been something I've been jumped onto, but I very much would believe, I think we ought to have discretion to treat those as misdemeanors. I have felt it forever. It's a vestige of 50 years and on back. It's never changed. I very much believe that. And if that were part of what this is, alone, that allowed us to have that discretion, I'd be for it. It just sweeps broadly for me that it takes my discretion away.
And you want to take it back to the local level, or at least to a county level.
It does.
Let's reintroduce you both. This is George Gascon with us. He supports Proposition 47 and is the district attorney for the city and county of San Francisco. Also is the former chief of police for San Francisco. And again, a supporter, a proponent of Proposition 47. And on the other side this morning is Steve Wagstaff. He's district attorney for San Mateo County and agrees with many of the ideas in Proposition 47, but doesn't see it as appropriate as a statewide proposition, something that maybe should be better handled on a more local level. We'd love to hear from you, what you're thinking, what you're wondering, and your take on this proposition. Give us a call at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also email your questions or comments to us at forum@kqed.org or post them on our website, kqed.org/forum. And already we have one person or a couple people writing in. Kate writes, incarcerating people for drug possession is a ridiculous waste of resources and virtually ensures that person will never be reintegrated into society. Another writer says drug possession should not be a crime, period. And Sharon writes, this one is difficult. Some get really crazy and dangerous on drugs, hurt and rob and steal. So it would depend on the situation. And one more that I'm going to go ahead and read. It's long. But Irvin is writing, as a drug abuse counselor and marriage and family therapist in the Bay Area, I cannot begin to convey the untold harm and personal suffering I'd borne witness to, hearing of tragic testimonies of my clients and how their lives have been broken as a direct result of these draconian drug laws, which have no parallel anywhere else in the industrialized world. In the larger term and on a national scale, the amount of societal damage is incalculable. Millions of careers and are destroyed and families sundered. So he is arguing, he says, take these statutes that have inflicted more damage than the drugs themselves off. He's saying vote yes on Proposition 7. Sorry there, Irvin. I couldn't keep reading. It goes on a bit. But those are comments clearly of, you know, some of the listeners already. George Gascon?
Yeah. Well, and first of all, the one listener that was talking about robbing, you know, if you're robbing someone, you're outside of Prop 47. If you're using violence, you're outside Prop 47. So it's very important for everyone to understand Prop 47 does not address violent and serious crimes. If you're committing those crimes, you're still going to face very serious consequences. Prop 47 is about very low-level offenses and primarily driven by substance abuse, number one. Number two, I agree with Steve to the extent that, you know, there has to be some local discretion, but precisely what we're doing is we're asking the voters. You know, this is about the voters telling us what they want us to do. 2 years ago, I proposed Prop 36, which was reforming three strikes. I heard some of the same arguments from a lot of my peers, but Prop 36 passed in every single county in the state, and it passed by 67%. There is a disconnect between people in law enforcement today in many communities and the communities that they're representing. We're asking the voters. That's all we're doing.
I want to ask you, Steve Wagstaff, about the concept of unequal justice and how sometimes communities or individual judges and DAs can really influence what kind of penalties come down for somebody who may be committing exactly the same crime in, you know, 10 miles away. So how do you wrestle with and how do you approach that question?
It's at the core of our governmental system. We have decided early on that we are going to have 50 different states with 50 different standards. What Texas and Virginia and Florida do are different than California. And California's made the same call. We don't want to be like Connecticut that has one state prosecutor who sets the standard for everybody. Instead, we're going to have 58 counties because we're such a diverse state with so many different attitudes that are out there. That's our structure of government. If there was somebody wanted to address that, the initiative would be, let's not have, for criminal justice, let's not have 58 counties. Let's have the Attorney General of California be the person that sets the standard for the entire state as the state's leading prosecutor. California's made the choice not to do that, and that's why that's the answer to that. It's our very structure of government.
And George Gascon, I want to ask you what's going to happen to already clogged courtrooms, overworked legal officials and workers and judges when there's a flood of people applying to have their sentences reconsidered?
Actually, and obviously that's a one-time process. And quite frankly, very limited in terms of the workload. We're looking at some of the people that are in custody today, and the number is really unclear. You know, you hear that number of 10,000 floating as people that may ask to have their sentencing reconsidered. But the reality is we don't know because some of those people are going to be disqualified from applying for a Prop 47 relief. Secondly, we're really looking at people that if they are in custody today, they have their sentencings are under 3 years. So the relief that Prop 47 may provide for those people is really very small. We're talking about a few months. And then finally, this is a process that obviously prosecutors and judges are going to be able to assess. We don't believe that that is going to be a flood. It's going to be certainly a spike for a few months, and then it will level off, much like it did with Prop 36 and the reform of three strikes.
Isn't there already, though, an enormous backlog?
And to that point, actually, the important piece of this is that when we start reducing a lot of these offenses from felonies to misdemeanors, we're actually going to provide a tremendous amount of relief for local systems. It is much quicker, much swifter. It requires less work to prosecute a misdemeanor than it does a felony. One of the things that Prop 47 hasn't done is we haven't estimated the savings at the local level, which are significantly great.
All right. Well, we have a lot of callers on the line. We'll get to all of you right after we take a short break. And once again, the number 866-733-6786. Talking this hour with George Gascon, District Attorney for San Francisco, and Steve Wagstaff, District Attorney for San Mateo County, about Proposition 47, which would reduce penalties for some crimes and some offenders. And again, if you'd like to send your comments in, it's forum at kqed.org or post them on our website, kqed.org/forum. I'm Penny Nelson. You're listening to KQED Public Radio and Forum. Stay with us. We'll be back after a short break. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Penny Nelson, and this hour we're discussing Proposition 47, a ballot initiative that would reduce the penalties for certain offenders convicted of non-serious and non-violent property and drug crimes. It also lets certain offenders previously convicted of such crimes to apply for reduced sentences And it states that any savings that the state sees as a result of this change will be used for truancy prevention, mental health and substance abuse treatment, and victim services. And with us for the hour is Steve Wagstaff. He is the district attorney for San Mateo County, and George Gascon, who is the district attorney for San Francisco and San Francisco County. And I promised we would go right to the calls, and so we shall. We've got Damien calling from Santa Rosa. Good morning, Damien.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
You're on the air. Go ahead.
Oh, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. So tell us what you've got going on.
Well, I work in mental health as a dual diagnosis counselor for a number of years, and I was also incarcerated for several years. So I agree with the proposition. I think it's a good idea, and anything that we can do to reduce minor criminals being in prison and costing us money sounds great. I'm more concerned about how the plans are being drawn up to use that money for mental health services, because letting people out or having misdemeanors instead of felonies is great, but if the support network's not there, you're going to see those people coming right back in and have the same problem with recidivism that we've had before. And I'll take my question off the air, but I just haven't heard many specifics about how it's going to be applied to mental health or creating more beds for mental health patients or any of that follow-up.
All right. Well, great question, Damien. Thanks. And George Gascon, let's
go
to you.
So, Damien, very, very good question. 65% of the funding will be available for cities and counties to apply for programs to deal with substance abuse and mental health. There is also a significant portion that will go for education, K through 12, primarily dealing with at-risk youth, and 10% will go to victims of violent crime. So the programs are primarily those that at the local level would be implemented.
Let me stop you there and ask you, you say apply for funds for, and right away as a citizen, that makes me think, oh, that's a lot of time. So what are we talking timeline as far as, you know, if the money is going to be there, how quickly can counties start to expect
right.
money?
So the Community Corrections, which is an established body of the state, and is used to handling a lot of disbursement of money to counties and cities for a variety of programs. We in local government are used to applying for funding for a lot of different things. Basically, what you have to do is you either have an existing program, like in San Francisco, we would probably apply primarily for existing programs that do not have enough funding. Other counties, like in Humboldt, they're probably going to create programs because they have none. Then the money is awarded. I don't want to lead anyone to believe that this is going to be enough money to cure all the problems that the state has, although we're looking at the possibility up to $1 billion within 4 to 5 years of funding available. We're a large state, and our funding needs are much greater, but this is a good place to start.
And so the specifics, you say 65% to rehab, drug, and mental health issues, 25% for school programs, and 10% for victim services.
Correct.
Okay, and then some more of the details that Damien was asking for.
Yeah, so how would the money be applied? It really would be depending on the local jurisdictions. A county like Humboldt that has no programs may be putting something together from scratch, and they will be applying for funding to provide the beginning of that program. A county like San Francisco or San Mateo that already have significant services, but not enough, will be applying perhaps to enhance what they already have going.
All right. Well, thanks for that. And you want to weigh in, Steve?
No, what George says is accurate. I'm just hopeful it happens. You know, I'm an old salt, and I remember in 1999 with the original Prop 36 treatment, and they said there wasn't a formula as here, but they said there'll be money. Don't worry. And so let's take and say there's no jail for any drug offenses, simple possession, first time, et cetera. And within 2 years, that dried up. By 2001, it was gone, and there is not a viable Prop 36 in every county. I don't know a reasonable person who says that's worked. So yep. I'm very hopeful what George is describing will come to fruition. It's the State Department of Finance director that makes the entire call ultimately as to what it goes. And times are good now. When times are bad, I just worry about what the state will do with that money. And
you worry about it getting siphoned off and pulled in other directions.
And Steve has a very good point. And one of the things that we did in 47 is because we looked at the problems of 36 and the funds being raided is under 47, the money cannot be used for anything else.
That's been said of so many things, though.
It's a constitutional amendment, right? It's within the Constitution. That funding has to go for the services.
Okay, and beyond, beds and people. Steve Wagstaff, talk about what you would do. Say you had the funding. I mean, you're not in that role, but as DA, what would be ideal for San Mateo County? Should that 65% of the resources be there available for drug services? How would you want to see it used? As somebody who sees the kids on the street, the people that are struggling?
No issue. Exactly. I bet George and I agree. I want it on drug treatment. I'm a big believer in drug treatment. It is it's the only court I still cover as the district attorney. I go down to our drug treatment, our drug court, to make sure it works. And I want it for there because I know I've seen over 37 years, I've seen how lives have been shattered by it. My concern is as follows, and that's sort of one of the reasons I oppose it, is that the proposition is I'm concerned. 3 weeks ago, I was at our drug court graduation. And there was a young woman named Heather who talked about she'd been an addict for a couple decades, and it wasn't until she got arrested. And the judge told her to remain. You know, you could go to prison for this. And she had not said this when she gave her speech at graduation, being clean for now a year and 2 months, saying, you know what, I needed that. When I heard that is when I got motivated. I wish everybody would be motivated. On misdemeanors, even if the programs are there, people aren't motivated because there isn't that, you know, stick that will make them want to grab the carrot. And I'm afraid that was the whole theory behind realignment. That was the entire theory behind realignment. Let's get them programming and money. And we're making it work. We're getting $15 million a year in San Mateo County, and which my sheriff and I take just a tiny little bit out of that for victim services. We want it to go to the probation and health services for the people. That's what I would do with it. And I'm concerned that that's just not going to happen. And I'm actually concerned it's going to affect how we truly evaluate the great experiment, as we call it, which is realignment from 2011.
But, you know, in listening to you, there are so many things about this proposition that make sense to you. I'm wondering, is it better than nothing, in your opinion?
Oh, no. I would rather not take this. I would rather go back to the legislature. I don't know if my comrades around the state would feel the same, but I certainly would rather go back to the legislature and say, there's good things here. Let's do it. Let's have Governor Brown, you know, who right now is a phenomenal leader in this state, back us on. Let's go get some of these things in there. But I worry if we want to change it. Let's say, Penny, something doesn't work. For instance, we know in there that the date rape drug got included. And I don't think anybody wants that to be in there. And we'd like to change it. But the way this proposition was written, in order to change it, to take something out of it, it takes a 2/3 vote of the legislature. If we want to reduce penalties further, then it's only 50%. Date rape drug, possession of a firearm. You know, in my county, I'm so against gun possession. Every time it's charged where I have discretion, we charge it as a felony. Under this, not if somebody possesses it loaded or concealed, but if somebody has a stolen gun, if somebody has a stolen property, which is it includes the gun, I can't charge that as a felony, no matter how many times they do it. I want to because I'm so against guns.
All right. And one of our emailers is asking specifically about date rape, a point you just brought up. She says, Kristen says, please ask the panelists about the possession of date rape drugs under the new proposition. Will possession of date rape drugs for personal use also be charged as a misdemeanor? How is possession of date rape drugs currently prosecuted? I understand that prior sex offenders would not be eligible for the misdemeanor charge under Prop 47, but I'm still concerned.
George, that's correct. Let me begin with the drug-facilitated sexual assault. The reality is that when there is an attempt to a sexual assault or a sexual assault, that is outside of Prop 47, and people will be prosecuted accordingly, and those are felonies. What we're failing to talk about when we're talking about drug-facilitated sexual assault is about 89% of the sexual assaults that are drug-facilitators are through alcohol. And then you have Benadryl accounts for another 2 or 3%. And then we have the problem, as that listener talked about, what about the people that possess these drugs for personal use? Because they do. It's a red herring when we're talking about the drug-facilitated sexual assaults. And that's an area that Steve and I disagree. The other part has to do with guns. The reality is that a prosecutor has many different ways to deal with guns. California has some of the toughest laws when it comes to illegal possession of guns. And prosecutors do not prosecute people that have stolen guns for theft. They prosecute them for some form of possession of a stolen weapon, and those continue to be felonies. Those are outside Prop 47.
Steve Wagstaff, you're shaking your head a bit.
George is right that there are certain times. If somebody has that stolen gun and in a concealed fashion, or they're a prior felon, or it's loaded, he's right. And I'm going to continue to prosecute those as felonies. What I'm concerned about, and we do get some, I don't want to say it's an enormous number, but we get some of the cases where it's somebody who's not a felon, who has the gun in their home And we do it on we're just doing our misdemeanor probation, whatever it may be. And we go in and do a search and find it. And all we have is the possession of the stolen gun. I can only do a misdemeanor no matter how many times they do it. I'm only get to do a misdemeanor, which we know. I'd like to say that misdemeanors are going to get treated seriously. Yes, they have up to a year available. But we know in every state resources are not spent on misdemeanors. It's just not there. It's not going to happen.
All right. And let's go back to the calls. We have John calling us from Sacramento. Good morning, John.
Yeah, good morning. I think it's a good proposition overall. It should be statewide. But I think the system, there's a total lack of common sense. It's appalling and pathetic that U.S. Has the highest rate of incarceration per capita in the world. You know, the system is just a revolving door for a great majority of people who are also minorities. So people that made, didn't make any, like, serious offenses, and the system is, in a certain way, discriminatory. Now, I have a question.
Well, it is going to be statewide. Were you meaning nationwide?
No, statewide. But let me ask my question.
Okay.
I have a family member who was in his 20s and kissed a teenage cousin, basically, you know, looking for it. This destroyed his life completely.
Wait, he kissed his teenage cousin. Excuse me. We're having a hard time hearing you. So he kissed his teenage cousin.
Hello?
Are you on?
Yeah, I'm on.
Sorry, John. We're having a little bit of technical snafu here. Okay, so tell us what happened.
Okay, so he was in his 20s and he kissed a teenage cousin that was basically, following him to get it. But anyhow, it doesn't matter. This destroyed his life completely. To this day, he has to register every year just as any child rapist or serious child abusers. Why do you have to group them all? Can your guest please talk about a way to distinguish between someone who made a bad decision that...
All right, and this is
that is a serious offender.
Sure, and this falls into the whole subjectivity issue, which and I think we talked a little bit at the very beginning about where sex offenders fall into this. So I would just ask you to.
And John, Prop 47 doesn't touch sexual offenses, so I think it's important for everyone to understand Prop 47 is a very narrowly focused proposition. It is a proposition, by the way, because the state legislatures were unable to pass this through the normal process. Frankly, I would much prefer to have had this done through the legislators, but the fact is that was attempted. It was fought. In fact, the District Attorneys Association fought this tooth and nail. Rather than try to work on perhaps refining the language, they didn't. They just totally opposed it. So we're doing here what has occurred about 12 times in the last 30-some years in the state, or 40 years, is when the people have recognized that the state government cannot do it, then the people are doing it, and that's what Prop 47 is. But Prop 47 is really focusing on substance abuse, mental health, possession for personal use of drugs. It is not, people that are involved in sexual offenses or serious and violent offenses are completely outside the scope of Prop 47.
Okay, and let's go to some of your responses here. I've got a tweet from Jonathan that says, the real issue is too much prosecutorial power, not too little. And it's interesting, I've got a couple here that are referring to you folks as, to both of my guests, as soft on crime. So I'll read a couple of these. Reynolds writes, could we start getting hard data on recidivism of particular criminals? District Attorney Gascon and other softies always dredge up these mythical, angelic, down-on-their-luck toilet paper thieves as an excuse to let all the criminals slide on serious crime. Can we get a pledge to get a system that allows citizens to track the status of all reported crimes, from police report to criminal charges, pleas, sentencing, actual time served, and recidivism? Until we have hard data, the discussion is only conjecture. And before I let you guys respond, I'm going to go on to a couple more that are similar. I wonder if the specter of being soft on crime makes it politically impossible to address drug addiction crimes in a rehabilitative way. It seems this proposition removes those handcuffs from police chiefs and local district attorneys. How do the guests feel about that? And one more for you folks. How would these soft on crime guests charge perps who rob people of an iPhone or bicycle by threat or force, even if no physical harm was committed on the particular occasion. What about the emotional toll on victims of crime who are repeatedly victimized by these career criminals? So really, I think all three of these writers are concerned that this just sort of takes the pressure off low-level crimes.
Yeah, actually, it's interesting. I have never been accused of being soft on crime. I have been in the business for 30 years, and I've usually been described as a hard ass, so I appreciate that maybe there's a balance there. But this is not a soft on crime approach. This is actually trying to take limited resources, trying to look at what works and what doesn't work. Actually, the question about data, certainly in San Francisco County, you have access to all the data. We have all our arrest data. We have all our crime data, our prosecutions. And the reality is that the data actually points to doing something like this. At a state level, 60% of the time, we fail. People that get put into the correctional system within 3 years, 6 out of 10 are failing. And there is a lot of data and there is a lot of studies that say that the problem is that we're not approaching this from the right approach. To reduce recidivism, you must go after the root causes. And when you're talking about mental health, and you're talking about substance abuse, and they're generally connected, by the way, because people are self-medicating themselves. The way to deal with this problem is through treatment and not incarceration. Incarceration doesn't fix the problem.
But as the last email said, what do you do about a serial offender who it's an iPhone, it's a bike, none of those things are over $900?
But that's a robbery. And when you're using force and fear, certainly in San Francisco County, they get prosecuted as a robbery. They will continue to be prosecuted as a robbery, and I know San Mateo does as well. Now,
right.
Sometimes we have a problem with juries looking at it and saying, hey, wait a minute, why are you prosecuting this as a robbery? But we do.
And, you know, Penny, I very much agree. That is it. And nobody, that's the first time in my 37-year career anybody has thought of me as soft on anything. Usually it's the opposite. But, and it is, if there's force or fear used, absolutely, that's going to be a robbery and we're going to prosecute them. However, if it's just somebody who does not use force or fear, just does the grab, the cell phone out of the hand running down the street, that's not by force of fear. That's theft. That's going to be the misdemeanor. And again, first time through, that may not be a felony in our county, since I use my discretion and other DAs do. But I want the opportunity when somebody is doing that, it's on their fifth, sixth, seventh time, and people are being victimized or their credit cards are being taken, their whatever it's being done, their ID's being taken. I know we still get to do identity theft, but I'm concerned that people go get in the line at DMV. I'm concerned for victims. And that's why if this initiative had said, you know what, for the first or second time, it's going to be misdemeanor. But after that, the DA has the discretion to say, you know what, they're not getting it. So now we're going to go felony to try and motivate them to get into treatment. Then I want that discretion. This doesn't give it to me.
This does not. And would you agree with that, George Gascon,
that
they do not have the discretion? If you have a serial offender who repeatedly rips off bikes, not by force, but is over and over and over, Steve West, he can't prosecute that as a more serious than a misdemeanor.
But here's the problem with that analysis. If the person commits 5 or 6 separate crimes of a misdemeanor, they can go to jail for up to a year for each of those times. Okay, number one.
If they're caught on each of those times. But what if they're caught on one, but they've been known to be...
Well, you get to do a year. Okay, and if you know that this is a prior offender, that's the way you would treat it. I think that the problem is that the concept that incarceration leads to coercing people into treatment is not what the science tells us. And if you talk to the people that are in this business, you talk to the scientists, you talk to the doctors, they would tell you that people that have a substance abuse problem or mental health, they're dealing with one day at a time. They're not thinking that they're going to go to prison for 2 years or 3 years, which generally, by the way, in this type of offenses will become very little time because they get released very quickly because there's not enough space, which is the other part of the conversation that is not being discussed here. But the reality is these folks are not thinking that far ahead. And what they need is they need to be pounded on with treatment, and eventually it will be a breakthrough for some and not for others.
All right, let's go back to our calls. I think I have Ronnie on from San Francisco. Ronnie, is that correct?
Ronnie, yeah.
Hi there.
Hi. I know someone who was raped in San Francisco a couple years ago, and she found out that two years passed, and her rape kit wasn't tested. And so that led me to learn about the huge backlog of rape kits in San Francisco and then thousands statewide. So for me, Proposition 47 seems to have the potential to refocus law enforcement resources towards violent crimes like rape and murder.
I'm not so sure that it does. Let's hear from George Cascone.
I think, you raise a really good point, and I want to make sure that I distinguish this. The problem with the untested rape kits, which, by the way, in San Francisco, a lot of effort has been put on by the police department to reduce that, it's a national problem. Quite frankly, it's a shameful national problem that we have not put the resources necessary to make sure that this evidence is tested and is uploaded into the national systems. Prop 47 really will not necessarily deal with that piece. On the other hand, what Prop 47 will do, and I do agree with you, is that it will allow greater opportunity for prosecutors and police to concentrate on more serious crimes and not waste a lot of time with the low-level offenses that are better handled by other people in the health profession and other services as opposed to law enforcement.
You know, the trouble with that, though, is, and I will only speak to the counties that I know of, the DA's office and the police are devoting their resources. I bet that's true. I bet your police chief is working awfully hard on those. We don't, our murders and rapes that aren't solved, it's not due to a lack of resources on that. But I do agree on the rape kit. Everything George said, I'm wholeheartedly
agree. Yeah, and that's been an ongoing issue in a whole different avenue.
Yeah.
We've got an email from Ray, and I'm not sure I understand what he's asking here, but he is raising the issue of identity theft. He says if identity theft is going to be nothing more than a misdemeanor, then I see what he's saying. On 47 is a no-brainer. So clarify where identity theft.
Yeah, identity theft continues to be a felony. It's outside of Prop 47.
Okay, so immediately that no.
The answer is
asked.
Don't worry about it. Vote for 47.
Identity theft, though. He's right, very much. Identity theft. You take a credit card, you take ID, and use it. Yeah. But if it's just simply a stolen credit card, that's theft. You know, it's the 44. That is going to be simply, again, you've lost your credit card, you've got to go down, and you lose your driver's license. It's not, though. I agree. 530.5 penal code remains untouched by 47.
Absolutely.
But the headache to the victim will continue to exist.
Okay. Yeah. And here's Molly writing, how does alternative sentencing like house arrest come into play? It costs much less and provides punishment that removes the person from society but may allow them to still contribute to society through a job.
Well, I think that certainly that continues to be an area where prosecutorial discretion and court discretion are going to play a role. You know, whether you're doing uncle monitoring, you're doing community-based supervision. Again, there are many people that we know that community-based supervision is a much more effective way, not only economically, but actually scientifically. It works better for many people when you're dealing with its low-level offenders.
But Prop 47 is unrelated to that.
That's correct.
It has no relevance on 47.
And who's going to be who's the watchdog of all of this? Who, I guess, would it be Kamala Harris as the state's chief law enforcer?
No. This is like any other. It's a law, and you know, counties are obviously going to have a level of discretion that they have according to the law, and then
that they have already. Okay. Yeah. Another listener writing in asking Mr. Wagstaff to give specific examples of how the public is served by giving prosecutors the freedom to apply felony charges to cases of illegal drug possession.
Motivates people. I believe. My belief is that it. I have seen it literally thousands of times. It motivates people. Not initially. I agree with George. Nobody says, I'm not going to use drugs today for fear of felony treatment. But once they're in the system, when they have choices, do I take this and am I going to go into treatment? Am I going to go into Delancey Street, the most wonderful program around? Am I going to do these other programs, which is a lot of time? Why would I do it? What will motivate me? And that's what I'm hearing from addicts when I talk to them later at the programs is because – you know, I'm worried about what could be done to me. Once I get in the program, you hope it catches there. But there are very few people who just on their own say, yep, I'm going to stop doing it. I'm going to do it on my own. And that's my concern with misdemeanors because, remember, we have 38 of our 58 jails are under court-imposed or self-imposed caps. We just can't take these people and put them into, you know, 1 year in county jail and all of those. It'll increase jail population. I'm not looking to increase incarceration. I'm looking to make sure that we continue to get everybody we can who is willing to do it. On three strikes as an example, my office policy is I will not send anybody on three strikes if they're willing. If they have a drug problem, that's what motivated the crime. I'm not talking rape, robbery and that, but motivated the crime. I want them in treatment. We will not ask for prison on those because I believe treatment is our first step. After that, we protect the public.
You know, I just want to add very quickly, because Steve is a very thoughtful individual, and we respect each other greatly. But the problem is that, you know, whether you're using a felony stick or a misdemeanor stick for somebody that has a substance abuse problem, first of all, the issue of overcrowded jails, the having the ability to put somebody in jail for 3 years obviously will increase the problem that we have. And that's part of the problem today, because under realignment, those offenses, even though they're called a prison term, it's a prison term that is served at a county jail. So capping it at 1 year is actually a better way to go. And again, the science tells us that these folks are not distinguishing between the potential of 1 year in jail or 3 years in jail. The treatment is what is going to make the difference.
All right. And one more quick. We're running out of time, but Ellen writes, the lurking elephant here is that the Supreme Court has ordered the California prisons to reduce overcrowding. This change in sentencing is a sensible way to deal with the reduction. Something has to give in a prison system that is currently not sustainable. And frankly, we know of so many communities where the police aren't even called out for low-level property crimes. They don't go out. They ask you to go down to the police station and file a report. So in some ways, there's already sort of a de facto elimination of certain crimes
and
prosecution.
It's a yes, but here's the other side, too, that we haven't even touched upon today, and I think is very important. Having a felony conviction, even if you don't do any time, it has a tremendous consequence in your ability to continue living on. It has a consequence for housing, for employment, for education. You cannot get federal grants for education. There are many pieces of the puzzle here that are impacted by 47 that we haven't even touched upon, and felony convictions is one of them.
And you get the last word, Steve Wagstaff.
Again, I respect George enormously. I appreciate what he's trying to do. I'm a believer that district attorneys should be able to do what they believe is right. I think I'm doing what's right in San Mateo County. Proposition 47 says we're going to have this lowest common denominator. We're going to do exactly. Remember, if Prop 47 doesn't pass, George can implement it for not everything, but for most things. I think I should have the ability to pick and choose, too.
All right. Well, thank you both. That's it for this hour. And Steve Wagstaff, District Attorney of San Mateo, and George Gascon, District Attorney for the City and County of San Francisco, have been with us, giving us the pros and the cons of Proposition 47. And thanks to all of you who wrote in and called in as well. If you want to hear other shows on our California Election Watch series, you can go to our website at forum@kqed.org. Well, stay with us for the next hour of Forum. Actor, writer, and Daily Show correspondent Asif Manvi joins us here in the studio, and we'll talk with him all about the fake news, the real news, and about his new book that covers a bit of his real life. Engineering this hour is Howie Gelman. Our show's producers are Judy Campbell and Irene Noguchi, Tina Lauerberg. Amanda Stupai is the engagement producer, and the senior editor is Dan Zoll. I'm Penny Nelson, and this is KQED Public Radio.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.